Very good. We are just waiting. It is now 2:30, and this is going to be a half an hour to appreciate the volunteers, all those people who have given their time in the background, in the foreground, or in the middle, wherever it happens to be, to look after this place in all different ways. And Dennis, would you like to, I hereby volunteer, chief volunteer for this year, who's the president of the Buddhist Society of Western Australia, I hereby ask the chief volunteer to explain what the heck we're doing.
Thank you very much, Ajahn Brahm. You couldn't resist that resonant, raspy, masculine voice that's coming through.
Yeah, I'm going to keep this. It gives me more, again, masculinity, people hear me. It's my sexy voice. Not that I need one at my age, being a monk.
Thank you, Ajahn Brahm.
But you know where I caught it, Dennis?
Volunteering.
No, I caught it at the airport. Airports are very dangerous places. That's where you get terminally ill.
Very good, Ajahn Brahm.
Okay.
Well, this little ceremony this afternoon, we really did want to do just to acknowledge all of the volunteers that do participate with us here in the BSWA. And probably right at the very top of the list too, just listening to that raspy voice, really, we should also appreciate that these monks and nuns that we have here are also volunteers, really. Yeah. They're certainly not paid staff.
Yeah, I was going to talk to you about that afterwards.
So that's really right at the very top of our little pyramid here, because I've got out here for you to come and have a look at later on if you would like, a little organisational chart of our Buddhist Society that I prepared for the AGM. But it's quite relevant here today. But you'll notice that right up the top is the Sangha, and certainly the spiritual director, Ajahn Brahm, as you all know, plays a very, very significant role here at the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. But having said that too, I really do want to make sure that the membership here are really fully acknowledged and appreciated for all of the work that they do. I think it's very instructive to look at the structure of our society, because in many ways it's a very unique structure right round the world, the way that our Buddhist Society works is in fact, I think, a very beautiful model that mirrors very, very much the way the Buddha actually asked or set out the way that a community should operate, the way that we should work together with monks and nuns and have a structure of monasteries. He talked about monasteries being far enough away, I think, far enough away from a city or a group of a place that's going to be a distracting place. And we have that. We have two monasteries. We have our Bodhinyana Monastery, that's maybe an hour's drive south of Perth, and we've got the Nuns Monastery, which is maybe 45 minutes to the northeast of Perth. And then we have this wonderful lay community that look after all of this. So just staying with the monasteries for a while, we have the lay communities that move down every day of the week to make sure that our monks and our nuns are fed. So they're moving to both monasteries.
This is the proof that they've done a very wonderful job. Maybe too much, but anyway, that's very wonderful.
But then it's not only just the monasteries either. I mean, our volunteers also look after our Jhana Grove Retreat Centre. So that's the retreats and that are conducted there, the 10-day retreats, the weekend retreats, they're usually always found, The food that's offered there every day is always found by the volunteers that come along to make that happen, to prepare for it and to make it all happen. So just that much is really, really quite a wonderful thing, isn't it, when you think about it? It's a beautiful structure when you look at it, just to see the way that the lay community interact with the monks and the nuns. And the monks and nuns again, in turn, interact back with the lay community. And this is really exactly how the Buddha foresaw it. The Buddha foresaw that if the lay people need or want to have good teachings from good monks and good nuns, they need to look after them well. They need to provide the four requisites, as he said, and that's what the lay people basically do. And then in turn the monastic community feed, if you like, the lay community. They bring the teachings and offer all of that spiritual advice that they're learning from their monasteries. So that in every way that you look at it, this whole enterprise is so beautifully balanced, where we learn from each other, we help and we interact with each other. But then beyond that, at our Buddhist society here, we have, first of all, a committee that's, that works to keep this whole place running well. The committee, again, are all volunteers, and they do a splendid job, meeting quite regularly to make sure that the business of the society is working well. And this society now is starting to get very large, so the business and the size of the enterprise here now is really quite big, and we need to have quite a lot of work going into the way that everything is managed and everything is controlled. So I'll just sort of refer to the committee as a whole without sort of, because it would just take too long to go down through everybody, but there are very dedicated members of the committee, especially up in the executive area there, where we look after the finances and look after the administration of this place. And then, moving on from that, we have all of these little coordination of services that sort of run down the side here, plus all of these other little jobs and duties that have done. And these things, I'm just going to get my glasses so that I can see this a little bit more clearly.
While he's finding his glasses, I should point out that the president, he's the one who also not just coordinates from the front, but shows the vision.
And vision is a big thing for me, because it was just on Thursday I had my left eye done with a cataract, so at the moment it's still a little bit blurry, so Ajahn Brahm is just reminding me a little bit about some of that. He likes to pull my leg a bit with me. Just the fact that we are all getting older. But I'm not too much older than Ajahn Brahm, I might say. He's coming up behind me quite closely.
Yes, I'm catching up.
So when we look down from the Buddhist Society Committee here, we can see that there's a treasury and up at the top there's membership secretaries. We have people looking at the constitution. There's strategy that's going on all of the time, being worked out. And then we've started off a new venture just recently, a Dharmaloka subcommittee. And there's certainly members that we've got in that. And there's one, I won't start to mention names, but there's a gentleman up the back with a high-vis yellow top on, who's been instrumental in making that work with a beautiful team of people. And then we can see Amanda up there in that little booth up at the back. She's instrumental in looking after the audiovisual side of our society, and has a big team that's trained all the time so that the live streaming can take place. All of these things might sound quite easy and quite simple, but they really take quite a lot of organisation. There's quite a lot of organisation that goes on behind them. And then there's our IT and web services. I don't know if PJ is here, but We will get the benefit of the work that he does through the web, and other gentlemen, another particular gentleman, maybe I'll just mention his name, Sol Hanna, who originally started up the web services. I think that we all acknowledge that he was one of the initiators and founders of really what's become quite a wonderful enterprise with the way that our website works throughout the whole of the world. And then coming down, we've got community coordinator. I know Anusha is here somewhere, whether she's in the room or not, I'm not sure.
Yeah, she's over there. She's been spotted.
But she looks after, so from there, that we look after, there's prisons and there's all sorts of community welfare work that's sort of done from there. Plus a new enterprise that we're just really starting to think about with community and membership welfare that's just starting to come online. The Kalyana Mitra Group is also organised and ran by volunteers. So this is a social group that we have that meets each Friday night. It's been very successful over the years. And then, of course, all the daily events, that's all done here, the security, this just things that you would just take for granted. The fact that we do need to have security here and people looking after cars and parking, all of that kind of thing. And of course we run a Sunday school each Sunday. There's a Sunday school all run by volunteers. Then there's the introduction to meditation and the teachings that go on. All this is done by lay people again. So every Saturday afternoon, there's a class that goes next door where I would imagine that there's been thousands by now, thousands upon thousands of people that have gone through that class, and actually many of them too, or at least a few of them, end up in Ajahn Brahm's monastery.
Yes. Be careful. When you go through that door, you don't know where you'll end up.
And then there's all the other events. There's particularly wonderful events that are had each year, especially associated around Ajahn Brahm's birthday. Uh-oh. These are quite wonderful wonderful days where we have a big dinner. This is one of the few times where it was... I don't know, I was saying a few times. I mean, maybe I should need to think there, because I was just going to say one of the few times that Ajahn Brahm gets the chance to go to five-star hotels. Yeah. But I think Ajahn Brahm might go to five-star hotels more than what I do.
Yeah, I volunteer myself to bless the five-star hotels.
He gets invitations to teach retreats sometimes at very salubrious places. But at any rate, these events... Fundraising events like that are all organised by our membership, and just the dedication that goes into some of these events and the amount of money that's raised is really quite spectacular. So we have, of course, there's the Enlightened Times, which is our newspaper or our newsletter, and then an Armidale group that's also run, that's all sort of run by volunteers. There's a whole library, the library in there. Just imagine the organisation it takes to keep that going. And the library is also a place where a lot of the payments and that come through. So these library people, the library staff, need to be skilled in many ways, skilled with being able to sort of take money through FPOS and being able to sort of order books and know which books to order and that sort of thing. So really a wonderful, wonderful event. Then we have, I'm just looking at the, let's just move down here through, the people that look after the reception, and certainly the administration area, and we do have some paid staff, and the paid staff are really wonderful, as they kind of stay and... learn how to sort of be here with the Buddhist Society. It's quite wonderful to see the work that they do. So we're very, very appreciative of our paid staff that we do have. And then all of the retreats, the bookings and the food and everything like that, it's all organised by various people. A lot that I've cast my eye around the room that I can sort of see sitting there and doing wonderful, wonderful work in making sure everybody's happy and working well at all the retreats and the centres that we operate. All the cleaning and the maintenance, the garden maintenance and everything like that, that's all done by our membership that's here. Probably one thing that I shouldn't forget either is really there's a lot of work that's done not only by members here but also in overseas places where they do things like translation of Ajahn Brahm's books. All freely given, all this work freely given. So we're very, very grateful to all of that as well. And then there's just the general membership that sort of look after us. And I will just mention Eddie Koo, who I don't know if he's here in the room right now. But
yes, over the back.
He's up the back, yes. I mean, you see all the lighting and the decorations that go around. I'm not talking necessarily about the Vesaka Day celebration decorations that we've got going up outside. It's sort of a different thing again. But Eddie is always there, doing things for just to make us all happy, to make this centre just a better and more wholesome place to come to. So then there's people that look after our public relations, and there's the people that look after, just looking at the list, there's even marriages. So I do a few marriages, and Ajahn Brahm certainly...
I've married many women. And men as well.
Yes, indeed. And men.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
So you can see just from that list, and it's by no means complete, that our volunteers are very, very important to making our whole society work so well. And I think that you can see that by any stretch of the imagination, the model that we've got here for this place is a model that's being sought after by many people around the world, just to look at our constitution, just to see how it has been set up. It's been set up so wisely by some of the people that began here all those years ago when we first started, when we first went to Ajahn Chah and asked if he would send some monks over to the little fledgling group here in WA. So without further ado, I'll now hand over to Ajahn Brahm so that he can sort of complete his thoughts, or complete my thoughts on this, and wish you all a very, very happy Vesaka Day.
It is sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So thank you, Dennis. And of course, Dennis has been volunteering from the very beginning when we first came over here. And the volunteering is part of a Buddhist tradition. It is, there are different ways of doing dana. And it's wonderful that, again, that some of those volunteers have ended up in robes. See a few of them over here. So welcome. And the volunteers, it's sometimes people work really hard. And sometimes they feel they don't get appreciation, but they are appreciated and make incredibly good karma. And they're always at the end of your life, or even before, I shouldn't talk about the end of my life, or the end of your life, or end of our life, that's when we start to look back upon what we've done. And all the different people who have volunteered, given their time, even the people who we employ here, they give much more than any normal person would give if they were paid. So they give always extra, which is a wonderful thing to appreciate. And it also means that you see just sometimes volunteers are trying their very best. So whenever a volunteer does, maybe it's not quite perfect, maybe it's just knots of the best. But that's not the point. I always thought that it doesn't. If you want to get the best parking, the best sweeping, the best gardening, you could employ someone and spend millions of dollars. But that's not the point. We're not in here to actually to develop the infrastructure. We're here to develop the people. People are more people are more important than things. And always remember that the volunteers, their happiness, their well-being, that is more important than getting it done to the best possible finish. Remember that I had to volunteer when I first went to Bodhinyana Monastery, and I learned how to be bricklayer, and I had two bad bricks in my wall. And that was wonderful. It's a wonderful story, a great anecdote. And so even now, all our volunteers, we don't expect them to be perfect. They all have two or three bad bricks in their wall. Take Dharmasara Nuns Monastery, for example. I better stop. But the point is that we're all giving with a very good heart. So you measure people's volunteer capability not by what they achieve, what they get done, but how they get it done, how they perform, and how they give as best they possibly can. And if it's not finished today, it can be finished tomorrow. If it's not finished tomorrow, next week. If it's not finished in your lifetime, your next lifetime. The wonderful thing about being a Buddhist is we're very patient. Not this lifetime, the next. So no big rush. So the point is that we're all giving with kindness in a good Buddhist way. And it also means that you meet other good Buddhists. People who are not really into criticizing. Well, a few people criticize one another. But that's just testing you out, just to make sure that you remember your Buddhist principles, that criticism, that even the Buddha got criticized. So what can you expect? You get criticized, but when you get criticized, always remember to keep both ears open. So it goes in one ear, out the other. But when you get praised, always remember to block one ear up so it can actually goes in and stays there, which is much better. If you don't have to do that physically, just remember that praise and blame are part of the world, so we don't need to make it a big deal. But instead, we appreciate all the kindness, all the giving in financial giving, volunteers from overseas as well, who come here and just ask, is there any project we can help out with? And one of the reasons why, when Dennis said, a lot of donations come from overseas is because they visit here. They have a look and see, how is the money being spent? What's it being spent on? Is it that some people are just doing this for their ego or for their... And that's one of the things that most of the, nearly all of the volunteers, you don't know who they are. They're down there in the back, sitting amongst you, working so hard, doing things which they just do in the background, and they keep on doing this and doing this and doing this, day after day, month after month, year after year. It's their life. And they're so happy to actually to be given the opportunity to do something wonderful to give. Because in our life, yes, we have a family, but this is another level of family, our community. We realize we're making a much better community by our volunteers. Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff which we do. Just... And some of the letters and some of the the words which we receive, it's not just me, it's just because someone like Ayahasapanya gives a talk and it just hits the spot with someone at the time they really need it. Or there's a book which is put out and somebody listens, reads that book and it's just what they need at that time. And just so many people, by being able to spread the teachings, the goodwill, the kindness, the truth, the honesty, by being able to share that in this world, it does inspire people. And it inspires them so much that it does literally save their lives. It does save their marriages. It just actually gives them meaning in life. It gets even illnesses. I feel like a bit of a hypocrite today, saying that good meditation heals your illnesses. But at least it gives you a good attitude if you've got an illness or a cough. But the main thing is it does increase a sense of happiness. And so there's thousands of volunteers in this Buddhist society. And some of them, you don't even know them. They sometimes just offer on money online, or they give their support overseas, or they're just in different parts of the country. There's people even listening online today, because this is streamed all over the world. And all those different people in different places, they also want to contribute. Contribute in many, many, many different ways. There are volunteers. There are community. There are Kalyana Mitra, noble friends. Even though we don't know their names, we don't see them. They are part of people who volunteer their time, their energy, their effort for something much, much bigger than themselves. And so for all of those volunteers, there's nothing much we can give. In fact, they don't really want much, because they know the happiness which they get from giving and volunteering is something which is so, so precious. But nevertheless, we want to acknowledge the thousands of people who make even this little hall you're sitting in right now a place where it's comfortable, safe, and all the clean, and all the facilities are here for you. So now, I'd invite with the monks and the nuns to do the blessing, which is the, what's a nice blessing? That's a good one, yes. So usually in our monastery we have this custom, whoever has the idea has to do it. Okay. So we'll do the blessing of the Chula Mangala Sutta, the Sabha Buddha. This is dedicated to all the volunteers. Wow. Very good. That's what volunteer is like. You see something needs to be done, you just do it. And do it in a funny way. Very good. Well done, Pop. Here we go. This is for all the volunteers, for now, in the past, and in the future, who make the Buddhist Society of Western Australia such an amazing organization. Sabha Buddha Nubhavena, Sabha Dhamma Nubhavena, Sabha Sangha Nubhavena, Buddha Ratanang, Dhamma Ratanang, Sangha Ratanang, Tinang Ratananang, Anubhavena Chatura, Siti Sahasa Dhamma, Kanda Anubhavena Pitaka, Taya Anubhavena Jinasa, Vakanubhavena Sabete Roga Sabete Vaya Sabete Antaraya Sabete Upadava Sabete Dunimita Sabete Ava Mangala Vina Santu Ayuva Dako Dana Vadako Siri Vadako Yasa Vadako Svana Vadako Sukha Vadako Hota Sabhata Dukha Roka Vayaveva Sokha Sad Chupadava Aneka Anta vaya pivina santu chate sa jaya siddhidana labang soti bhagayang sukha balang siriya yuja vano chabogang vudhi chaya sawa satawa sacha jiva siddhi vantute. So for all the volunteers, great blessing for you all, a unique blessing. It's very rare that you hear a blessing so out of tune. It's unique, but it all works together. It shows that even though there's so many different people, so many different types of Buddhism, so many different places where you've been born, so many different pitches, but somehow or other it all comes together. So I decided, well done. Excellent. So the next thing on the agenda, if I remember correctly, is a Dhamma discussion. Is that correct? Where's the volume? Okay, yeah, somebody said yeah. So that'll do. So for that, what we usually do is instead of the monks and the nuns expounding from the stage, we ask people to interrogate us. So, you can ask a question on the Dhamma, on something interesting, something concerned with the Buddhist society or Buddhism or meditation or something, and then we'll let somebody in the Sangha answer that question. That's what we've done. So it means instead of us just giving a talk, now you can ask us things we may have missed. So, who's going to ask the first question? No? Okay. Well, we can all go now then. Go back. Okay, yes, Steve. Oh, Mike, yes. Come on, Pei. This is our volunteer. This is our health and safety volunteer. She has to run around and just get more healthy.
I'm glad Stephen, Stephen Lim. My question is that, see, most of us, we are all laymen. We work in the real world. I know we have all sorts of problems like with our job, with people and all that. And then, of course, the monks and the nuns, you all live in a monastery. And some people have the view that you all, well, with due respect, that you do not see the real world as it is. So you expect us to actually like behave and like you guys where you have like, you know, where in your monastery or whatever, you don't have all the sort of problems that we guys have to encounter in the real world.
Yeah. First of all, the real world. Who wears deodorant to mask the real smells of the body? Not the monks and nuns. Who wears hair dye? Not the monks and nuns. Who wears wigs? Not the monks and nuns. When you go, sometimes have to go into shopping centre. How fake a world that is. And sometimes the real world, I find the real world, you find in monasteries. Where there's honesty and there's kindness and there's, we just see the world as it is instead of trying to patch it up. But we certainly have our problems. Oh, the problems with getting permission from councils, don't we? That's really difficult. And the problems with dealing with junior members of the Sangha who just don't really understand and need to have things explained to them. And health and safety, many, many things. So sometimes the people have the idea that a monk or a nun lives like in an ivory tower where we don't get to know the problems and difficulties of a world. But everybody no matter where you go in this world, we can't escape from our karma of being born as a human being. We can't escape from disappointment sometimes, and from sometimes praise and blame, from tiredness and sickness and old age. It's hard. And of course, you know, I think many of you notice how hard some of the monks, nuns, have to work. We continue doing that as much as we can. So it's, you appreciate, you know, just trying to get by in this world, trying to get enough to pay the bills. And so sometimes we do live in a different world, separate worlds, but it's worlds where we can intersect. So often I ask people to come and have a look at my cave where I live. Just how simple. In a time before we had tiny houses becoming popular, you know, the Sangha had kutis where we lived. You know, which is so fashionable. We're way ahead, you know, of the years and time. Just even bald heads. How many of you have got bald heads now? And it's not because you're getting old. People actually shave their hair off. We were there such a long time before you guys were, with with fashion. And so anyway, so so a lot of times you appreciate, you know, your problems, and also marriages and relationships. Sometimes people say, oh, you don't know what it's like to have a relationship. Of course I know what it's like to have a relationship. So that's one of the reasons I became a monk. So anyway, that's my little take on that. But you got anything to add? Hi, Hasa.
Actually, we are not born as the monks or nuns.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I have my son, I have my grandson. So, yeah. And I come to monastery, I do lots of things I never ever done before. With the building project, I was so busy. And especially, you know, every day they hit into something goes wrong. And there's some structural problem, this problem. I have no idea, you know. I remember the first time, you know, when I look at those drawings and they talk about ifs. I said, what is if? I don't even know those terms. I have to look dictionary. Yeah. What is that, you know?
Yeah, that was Adam's wife.
And I have to deal with all these things, you know, deal with our builder, you know, and we have structural problems, and then you have to meet every day. You don't know what you're going to hit, you know, because, and then you have to force to make decision right now on the spot, because you have to solve the problem right now, because all the traders line up. So we cannot delay. If we delay one, everybody delay and the traders don't come back. And I just have to be brave that, okay, you know, if people not happy, if I any decision, if they think that it's wrong, that's it. If they don't like it, too bad. I'm doing my best, you know. So that's why sometimes you have to have the courage, you know, just okay, that's it, you know. Sometimes you have to make decision. And you can't always think that, oh, whether it's the right decision, wrong decision, whether people will blame me, people will criticize me. If I keep thinking like that, I can never make any decision. So sometimes you just have to be brave and just, I deep down I know that I'm doing my best. If people still don't like it, and not my problem, you know. So too bad. If people don't like it, too bad, you know. And lots of things I have never done it before in lay life, like some of the nuns here, that you know, before they never operate an excavator. Now they operate excavator, you know, and do a lot of things that they have never ever done it before in lay life. Actually, yeah, and then people think that they meditate whole day, contemplating.
Oh, in my dreams.
We still work. We work hard, you know. And especially, you know, early days, we have just a few nuns, we work hard, you know. And because such a big property, we have close to 600 acres, you know. Bushfire season, we have to do the clearing, we have to do the raking. Just only a few of us. you know, afternoon we have to come up do raking, you know, and the fire bricks and all this with a few paper. Work so hard. And then we last time we don't have this the gravel pit there. We re-vegetate the area. And we don't have this irrigation. We take, you know, we went to the first dam, you know, to take water and walk up to the gravel pit and hand water. My face like a strawberry, it's so hot. really hard work. People have no idea. But now, I think now the junior one now come in that they won't as hard as we do.
No, I appreciate that. When I was
I
a young
used to climb up to the roof and do all sorts of things, you know.
Yeah,
but now,
as you
grow older and you become more senior, then actually you don't move your body so much. Then you move your mouth exercise. That's what you can see, you become all round.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I mean, we are not born as a monk or nun. It's not that we never see the world before, we see it, you know. And
yeah.
we still, you know, we still human beings, isn't it? We still need to eat, you know. You know, if not we die, you know, we still have to, you know, we're just human, you know. It's just that we have a live in a different environment that more conducive to the practice, that's all. And then besides that, you know, we are just like anybody else.
We have very nice bosses, don't we?
Yes.
You're the boss, and that's what your other boss.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any more questions coming?
Hey, Jindan, I believe that on Thursday or Friday last week at the monastery was fish and chip day. I'm just wondering if you managed to get all the chips that you were expecting.
How did you know that one?
I've got a spy.
Oh, that was a lot of suffering. Oh, terrible suffering. Because somebody bought some fish and chips from a very nice fish and chip shop. And then when I saw it on the table, saw the fish, couldn't find the chips. And what's the point of having fish without chips? It's like having spaghetti without the sauce. It's like having the papaya without the chili. It's like, and so I thought, oh well, I'm used to suffering, so I just let it go. Until I found afterwards, Dennis, just after I finished, you know, talking to people and looking after everybody after the meal was finished, I came down at 12:30 and the Anagama said, I found the chips. They were under the table. Someone had hid them. And so there's a big pile of chips and he showed them to me and you could see them. A whole heap of them. You could smell them. But it was past 12:30. I couldn't eat them. I said, what do you do that for? So we do have suffering in our monk's life. But nevertheless, I'm used to suffering. Yeah, the birds were happy. So out of tragedies, there's always somebody gains out of this. So there's lots and lots of birds come to the monastery. When you see them at lunchtime, as you know, because they know when the food is. And they had a ball, you know, eating chips. All those birds, the parrots and the magpies, they had a wonderful time. So I dedicated my loss, my suffering. May all the birds be happy and fat. And I think they were. Who told you that, Dennis? I better be careful of what I say in monastery. Got too much spice.
Like birds.
Yeah, boss like birds. Okay, little bird told him. Okay. But anyway, I do well enough for food. Any other questions? Serious question? Is a question somewhere? No, she was just... Yes, a question over there to your... Yeah.
as a Buddhist, I understand that we're not allowed to do certain things like drinking and lying and stuff like that. But I guess what I want to notice, what if we do those sinful things, but with the good intention behind? So the act itself and the intention behind, like, how do they relate? Like, using white lies. I mean, I've lied so many times to my friends just to make them feel better. And I know that those things are not really true, but I still said it because I knew that those lies are going to make them feel better.
Okay, doing sinful things. So who's the expert in Dhammasara Monastery about doing sinful things? Maybe Venom.
I don't know how to tell lies.
You said you weren't born a nun.
No, I finally did.
Maybe Venom give it to Venom Upeka. You're sitting there, come and share it around, come on. About doing sinful things. Are you going to? Yeah, come on, you can. Yeah. Share the embarrassment.
I really don't know the answer. I also tend to try and make people happy. I sometimes go, yeah, when I go, well, I guess you go by how it makes you feel. Like, if you've told a lie, you feel a little bit not quite good. And so you might have told a lie to make that person happy, but afterwards, if you feel just not good about yourself, then it's just not worth it, you know? So, and how to get out of it and not hurt somebody, I don't know. You just and R. Does anyone else have anything to say?
Like, what about this though? What about Venerable Kassapa?
Sometimes you do know, and someone says something. If you say something that you don't really mean it, I feel really uncomfortable. It's just like a flatterer, you know, and just keep praising someone that you don't mean it. And sometimes I know the person is a flatterer. Whatever the person said, I don't believe.
Am I a flatterer?
Oh, well.
Okay, we'll catch that.
Okay. The thing with the precepts is that they lead to blamelessness. So when we see these small things, firstly, when we come to the training, it's not that we have to do these things perfectly, but we learn from our own experience. So if, you know, we lie or we drink or we do these things, we look at the result of that. It might lead to a temporary happiness and we think we've resolved a situation, but down the line, if our friends find out that we've lied to them or we continue drinking, and then we start to see a negative effect of these things on our lives. So it's about starting to see the cause and effect of these actions and just becoming more skillful. So there's ways of dealing with situations, like if you know you're going to go into a situation, then spend a bit of time meditating beforehand to get some positive mental states up so you have some skillful way of dealing with that situation, because it's kind of the easy way to lie and say something, but then you're breaking somebody's trust as well. And also when you go to meditate, you kind of have to let go of these things and forgive yourself of them to be comfortable with yourself. And so the Buddha kind of bases our mind on a blamelessness. And when you have this blameless state of your virtue, then you have bright and happy states of mind. And then they influence the people that you're around. So, in effect, even if you're having to say things which are truthful, you can do it in a skillful way, but then the positive person that you are, because you have that blameless bliss inside you, will be more of an impact on those people. So, yes.
Hello. During meditation, say over the course of a couple of months, you start to notice some kind of habit of a pressing thought of a certain topic. Do you ever encourage introspection during meditation, or do you reserve that for outside of meditation?
Oh yeah, there's sometimes that's a skillful means to something is keeping on recurring. You know why? And just try and find a cause of it. Why that happens? And sometimes it's something, you know, quite simple. You know, like I was saying, there was a meditator last range retreat who was she was getting some very weird states, and they thought it was actually a stroke. But it wasn't anything except that she was dehydrating. It's something ordinary, simple, which was very easy by just drinking some more water. So sometimes the problems which we face, even in meditation, you know, maybe you feel sleepy, now that's a recurring thing, then just open the window, get some more air. Or just you may be restless. Instead of trying to stop the restlessness during the meditation, just what were you doing before you sat down to meditate? Now, because you take that into your meditation with you, you're behind the a normal state of peace. You've been rushing around, just you know, cleaning up everything and even doing good stuff, you know, like you were doing down at the monastery the last few days. But still, you know, that if you want to meditate, just relax, first of all, for the first 5 or 10, 15 minutes. So when you go into meditation, the restlessness has been pretty much dealt with. So introspection during the meditation, fine. But the problem is that sometimes when you get into deep meditation, you get to that stage of meditation, the mind is really clear, and you can think about anything, which is so easily. I remember some of the best Dhamma talks I could give when I was in deep meditation, and everything was so clear. I wish people could hear this, it was just so profound. But I realized that that was indulgence. I should have just stopped and just gone deeper into meditation. It's almost like Mara, his last line of defense to stop you getting enlightened, is to give you the idea you're the best Dharma teacher since the Buddha. So, and just go deeper. Anything to say on that? Very good. Are you flattering me? Do you really mean that? Or? Okay. Thank you for that meditation question.
Hi, I was just speaking to some friends about this earlier, but I was just wondering what the difference between Dharma and Sutta is.
Dharma and Sutta. So who's going to answer that one?
I don't know.
I don't know. Of course you know. Okay. Oh, difference between Dharma and Sutta. Like, Sutta is like the teachings of the Buddha as best we know them. And for those of you who want to find out, you know, what suttas do we know were actually taught by the Buddha, what are original, then there's a great work done by Ajahn Sujato and Ajahn Brahmani called the Authenticity Project. And I think that there was a series of lectures given here, and that should be online somewhere. Highly recommended about early Buddhism and why we can actually take something like a sutta and realize that no, this was not taught by the Buddha. It was added later on. And how we can take something that really was taught by the Buddha. The evidence is quite compelling. It was original taught by the Buddha. And that's called the suttas. And the suttas is the vehicle which actually encapsulates and carries the Dhamma. And that Dhamma is the best description of Dhamma was given to me by Venerable Bhikkhu Bodhi. This experience right now, what you're experiencing right now, where it comes from, the why, the source, the origin, that is called Dhamma. Where it leads to is called, you know, atta, the benefit, the meaning. But actually, the why, the rules, the laws of the mind, nature, how it works, that's the Dhamma. So the Buddha spent his life explaining the Dhamma, teaching it, explaining it from this direction, that direction, and that was encapsulated in these books, teachings we call the suttas. So the suttas contain the Dhamma. Because people always have arguments, and you may have your favorite teacher, but as a Buddhist, you should never take refuge in Ayahasapanya, excuse me, or Ajahn Brahm, or Ajahn Chah, or Thich Nhat Hanh, or His Holiness the Dalai Lama. We always take refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Not one particular monk or nun, no matter how much you revere and venerate them. So that's really important, because sometimes people say, oh, I'm a disciple of this teacher. My teacher says this, and your teacher says something else. My teacher's more enlightened than your teacher. No, they're not. My teacher is more enlightened than your teacher is enlightened. And that's where we get into a lot of spiritual materialism and spiritual one-upmanship. So we take that away. We have the suttas as our last reference to actually to find out, you know, what is Buddhism? And what isn't Buddhism? What is the Dhamma? What isn't Dhamma? That's one of the reasons why that we've, for a long time now, that we have encouraged the teaching of the suttas here in the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. Translating them, helping translating them, teaching Pali, so the monks and the nuns have a very good idea of what is the Buddha's teachings, what isn't. And the same with the lay community. It's not just for scholastic reasons, it's so you can be sure that even when you see your monks and nuns, you see the Bhikkhuni Sangha. Where did the Bhikkhuni Sangha come from? It was there in the time of the Buddha. It disappeared, and people said, oh no, it's gone forever. But because we looked in the suttas and in the Vinaya, and we find it hasn't gone forever. There's no reason why it cannot be resuscitated. And so that's another thing, that this Buddhist Society of West Australia has been at the forefront of that, reviving the Bhikkhuni Sangha in our world, in Theravada. And here is the evidence. Yeah. And you may not know that this is the 10th anniversary of the full ordination of the Bhikkhuni on October 22nd. October. And your Mali birthday as well. But that's not as important as the 10th anniversary of the full ordination of Bhikkhunis here in West Australia. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. So that will come from understanding the suttas and the Dhamma. Yes, Ananda. I'll over there first of all.
Oh, a question. This question is to Ajahn Brahm, the monk and the nuns, okay? Yeah. That the Buddha was telling us that our mind is the forerunner of all states. Yeah. Don't you think we can pretend you're happy when you're blue? It isn't very hard to do. Don't you think we can just put in all the good thoughts, you know, to drown the negative thoughts, to make ourselves happy?
Yes.
Now, there's something to that. I mean, the Buddha actually said there was four types of practitioners. The fast and easy, the slow and easy, the fast and hard, and the slow and hard. So it's really up to us whether we want to bang a head against the wall or whether we catch ourselves and then do the Ajahn Brahm push-ups. And because, you know, sometimes we do. We take life too seriously and we get caught in negativity, and if we just reflect on our positive qualities and the good that we've done and the Brahma Viharas and these kind of things, we can change our mind for the better. And then, you know, isn't that a taste of freedom from suffering by having positive mental states? So yes, I think there's some truth in that, definitely.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. Charles, you want to say something? No. Yeah, very good. Very good. There was Ananda had his hand up, so it's the mic. Where's Mike gone? Mr. Mike? Mr. Mike? Oh, thank you. Ananda had a question. Then we have some from overseas.
Ajahn, today being the Vesak day, I think there was some question about sutras and the Dhamma. The thought came to my mind that I just want to ask you, Majjhima Nikaya 123, Acharya Adbhuta, wonderful, marvelous about the Buddha's life, birth and the enlightenment, passing away. There were all those nice things. Even recently someone criticized all those things. They said they are just additions. But these are the wonderful things that happen on the birth, and also at the time of, I think, Ayahaspanya, touching the earth, those things. And people seem to be, without knowing, without reading, simply criticizing even the Buddhists. I would like to see your views on that one, especially today being the Vesak day. And also I remember, I think, Venerable Analia has done a comparable study on this 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
Majjhima Nikaya 1, 2, 3. Acharya Adbhuta, which is wonderful, marvelous.
Yes.
Sutra that he says it is fairly clearly evident even in the Chinese Sagama as well.
Yeah.
And also I think Buddha said, if anyone has, I think it's in the last paragraph in the Alagadupamukha Sutta, that anyone has just love, just faith on me, that they will be heading up on death, but not down. So I just would like to have your views and advice on that. Thank you.
Yes, it's sometimes as a modern person, we are highly educated, and there are some things which we experience. We say, no, that can't exist. That goes against science. It cannot happen. But of course, you know, Ananda, that I was trained as one of the hardest scientists in theoretical physics. And even in theoretical physics, in quantum theory, there's some really weird stuff, which is true. And that begs the question, just sometimes when strange things happen and you experience them, you see them, is it the case that that this is not true, or is it the case that your framework of understanding by which we interpret this world needs to be expanded? We're only seeing a narrow spectrum of reality. And everything else we deny, no, it cannot exist. And an example of that was simple things like acupuncture. I remember reading articles about acupuncture when I was young. It cannot exist. You cannot give a person an operation just by putting needles into their meridian points or whatever. Until a group of doctors from the West went over to China or somewhere, and actually saw it happening. It worked. And so what happens? It expanded our understanding of this world. And some of the stuff you see about the amazing, just the almost what maybe doesn't fit in, you know, to our world, at least our world view by most people, a lot of times our own experience expands that. We see it actually does happen. And we have to just rethink our ideas of what's possible, what's not possible. And this is especially for people who manage to actually to practice this Buddhism of meditation, get very deep in meditation. That opens up a huge area, you know, of things which most people in the world think, that's impossible. You're just imagining things like previous lives, like even psychic powers and stuff. See how that can, but you're hallucinating, but it's real sometimes. So that's one of the reasons why, if you've had some deep meditation, you can understand by some of the things which the Buddha said, like being able to sit for 7 days without moving, just after becoming enlightened, just in bliss. can't be true, but it is true. Has been done. So, little by little, be skeptical. But also, be skeptical of skepticism. So sometimes it means that one hasn't had the experience yet. It may be true, but wait and see. Even things like rebirth, reincarnation. I really sort of was surprised that people don't have open minds. They've already decided that it doesn't exist, in spite of any evidence. And such people, they're dogmatic. They've decided without any consideration. Maybe even somebody coming up here a couple of years ago said they like everything about Buddhism, but one thing which they don't like was the idea of reincarnation. And they were just, I think they were scientists, and they said, well, what's the problem with it? He said, there's no evidence. Of course there's evidence. I was citing this, 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 and this. Have you seen the evidence yet? Oh, no, 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 no. So that's sort of ignorance. So one of the reasons why, that some of the amazing stuff which you see in those suttas, maybe they are true. If you haven't experienced it yet, don't just dismiss it. Oh, no, it can't be true. Maybe it is. Maybe it is true. And one day, who knows, you may experience something very similar. So that's the most mysterious and magical. You got anything you want to say on that?
Yes, I think some years ago, there's a lady came to me that actually that's her daughter being reborn as a grandson, and all this funny thing happened. Then she said because she's a non-Buddhist, and because she said that because of Buddhist belief in rebirth, so that's why she said, I don't dare to tell anyone because people might think that I'm crazy. So that's why she comes to the monastery and she told me all this, you know, about the grandson. Actually, it's her daughter, because the grandson just, I think, like, when her grandson was about a year old, and the grandson just hugged her, and the behavior is just like her daughter, you know, like hugged her. And telling her that, Mom, I love you, and all these sorts of things. And but of course, she said she don't dare to tell anyone. She just keep it to herself, because she was saying, she told me that if she's going to tell other people, they might think that she's a bit crazy. Because of grief, because of thinking of her daughter so much, you know. But it truly happened. And because of, she said that we Buddhists believe in rebirth, that's why she dared to come and tell me all these things. And then there are a few incidents also. People remember their previous life. But they said, because they are non-Buddhist, and if they try to tell their friends or families, people might think that they're crazy.
Very good. Never, there's two types of religions in the world. Those who bend the truth to fit their faith. Those who bend their faith to fit the truth. Which one are you? Oh, okay. We'll not do these ones first. Okay, yeah. I'll do one of them from overseas first of all, from Malaysia. How is our karma affected if one merely forms in his or her mind a breach of precepts, but does not actually take steps to breach it in real life, such as imagining drinking alcohol? Can you imagine the beer or the wine, or even though I strictly abstain from drinking alcohol, is insignificant. However, if you keep thinking about that again and again and again, what you think about becomes a habit. And when it becomes a habit, maybe you lost your mindfulness, you're a bit tired, you just do it. So it's good to be able to, it's not really a bad thing if you just think about this and think about that. But if you think about it too much, it becomes a habit, and then eventually you do it, and then you break your precepts. But it's not that bad. So instead of thinking about drinking alcohol for Malaysia, you should think of being a monk or being a nun, and how peaceful, how wonderful it is. So develop that thought. Okay, there was a question there.
Talking about Bhikkhuni, Ajahn, on behalf of women in Australia and around the world. We would like to thank you for to make this happen today, to make to ordination Pikuni, because I think in some country it's unacceptable. So we would like to thank you that to bring women as equal as men, women and men all equal. And I remember you did work really hard, and you risked your job, your life, I could say that, to do this. Yeah, you do amazing job, and I couldn't find any better day to say thank you. So today is really good day to say thank you for all women in Australia, in Perth, and around the world. You are.
I would like to take this opportunity to express our gratitude and appreciation for all the support. And without Ajahn Brahms and his monk support, I don't think this Bhikkhuni ordination be possible. Because I remember that day, you know, the day before that the ordination, actually we are really so pressure.
Yeah.
And been, you know, so many phone calls, tried to convince us to withdraw and things like that. But the monk really stood by us, and we really appreciate. Without their support and they stood by us, I don't think this is possible. Only thank you for Bodhiyana Sangha and Ajahn Brahm.
Very good. The next question from over here, anyway, is, I am an artist, but sometimes I feel like creating artwork through painting is boosting my ego and sense of self-identity. Is it possible to be an artist and still let go of the ego? I think sometimes when you're an artist, that to be able to do something and really let go and let the painting or let the artwork just be be something which transcends you. And I know that sometimes that, you know, even like giving a talk or doing some chanting, if I get in the way, and Ajahn Brahm, I'm afraid of giving a making a mistake in the chanting, or afraid of saying something wrong in the Dhamma talk, then it never flows. And there's too much ego inside of me. And so I remember an occasion, it was one of the first times I gave a really big talk, I think in Singapore, about 3,000 or 4,000 people in an audience, and just me giving a talk, no backup, you know, and just facing, I thought, what am I got myself into? I never became a monk, you know, thinking that I'd ever become just the person giving talks to such a large crowd. But then I stopped myself and think, no, it's not me giving a talk. I said, it's my teacher, Ajahn Chah, giving a talk. Because, you know, he trained me, he brainwashed me. He was the one who encouraged me. So I actually just passed the ego buck back to my teacher. And I thought, I'm not giving a talk tonight. My teacher is. This is my act of gratitude and my act of thanks to my teacher. And so I'm not giving a talk this evening. Ajahn Chah was. And then when I got out of the way, if it's a good talk or a bad talk, pass the buck to Ajahn Chah. It's his fault for not training me properly or for training me well. And that way, got rid of the ego thing. And it was a lovely talk, and it took all the pressure. The same when you are creating an artwork. I don't know who your teachers, who your main influences are, but it's like channeling them. You know, it's not your work. It's your teachers, your life, your parents, your lovers, your main influences, the people who've really influenced you. They're the one who's doing the artwork, not you. And that means that the ego steps out of the way. And it usually becomes a very wonderful piece of a wonderful exercise. So that's my answer. You got any answer for that to add? Anything you want to add to that about doing an artwork?
It's also good to be able to express. So, your emotion, and it's really helpful, you know, because sometimes now these people using art as a therapy, actually it's quite good to express, because sometimes we need to release our emotion, and this is the most skillful way through art, you know, to release that. And yeah, I think it's wonderful.
Very good. There's another question from the floor before I got one more from the internet. I'll go to the last one from the internet here. From the United States. And this is where people are listening in from all over the world to this afternoon. We're very fortunate to be able to have this live here. But people know this is happening on Waysak. They don't have a temple close to them. And so they're celebrating their Waysak online. It's a wonderful thing that they can be able to do. And this is from the United States. How does one avoid the trap of labeling oneself a bad Buddhist and further strengthen our egos? It's very good. Even calling yourself a bad Buddhist is more ego. Is it the case of the three conceits that Ajahn often talks about? The conceit that I am better, I am worse, or I am the same. In other words, we don't label ourselves. So you're not a bad Buddhist, you're not a good Buddhist, you're not an ordinary Buddhist. You're just in training. Is a person at school a bad kid or a good kid? They're just learning, they're going through the training where they develop. And of course, everybody makes mistakes, and we learn from our mistakes. So we're not a bad Buddhist, we're just acknowledging our mistakes, forgiving them, and learning. So we're growing. So never call yourself a bad Buddhist. Say, call yourself a growing Buddhist. Learning, becoming better. Anything you want to add?
Very good.
Very good. Carry on.
You go for interview, you know. So he will say, "Okay, very good. carry on." Okay.
That's right. Yeah. So I've just broken all my precepts, and I come and say, "Very good. Carry on." So what have you got to? So some more questions? It's. Another. What time are we going on to? 4:30, isn't it? Long time, yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's only 4:00. Not yet, 4:00. Okay. Some other questions. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Very good.
Just would like to know: can Buddha emit like those lightings from his body, and can he fly or walk in the water? Because I've seen that, like. Those sort of things in some books, and also some statues of Buddha doing all those things in some countries.
You're talking about the person who was a Buddha or other enlightened beings throughout the ages?
The Buddha.
And
also, I don't know what to call it, it's like that little thing between his eyebrows, that thing actually emits some sort of
little light. Tuft of hair, yeah, like a mole. Okay. But it was some of those things that which people said would distinguish the Buddha from any other human being. There were just too many other cases where that people came across the Buddha and they didn't recognize who the Buddha was. He just looked like another monk. So the best story was, many of you have heard this before, where one of the disciples of the Buddha went to the west coast of India and set up, you know, a sangha there. And one of this monk's disciples decided, after having his initial training, to go and meet, you know, his teacher's teacher, the Buddha. So in those days you had to walk. So he was walking in stages from the west coast to the Ganges Valley. And along the way on the journey, that he went to a, it was a, like a potter's workshop, and asked if he could rest for the night in the lean-to. It has some straw there. I said, yeah, sure. And an hour or so later, another monk turned up, who also asked if he could stay the night there. So these two monks didn't know each other, were resting there in this workshop, and one of them started meditating, so the other one meditated, and when the other one opened their eyes, the first one, the second one was meditating, so they meditated as well. So the two monks meditated all night. And in the early morning, before they went off on alms round, the one monk said, oh, you're a very good meditator, who's your teacher? And he said, oh, my teacher is a disciple of the Buddha, you know, he lives on the west coast, and said, very good, and you know, what are you doing? I said, I'm coming, travelling to meet the Buddha. And then the travelling monk said, and who's your teacher? And the other monk said, I've got no teacher, I'm the Buddha. I spent the whole night with the Buddha, and I didn't recognise you, I'm so sorry. So it was one of those examples there where, you know, the Buddha appeared just like any other monk. So indistinguishable. But as far as some of the psychic powers, in what's usually known as the third sermon, the fire sermon, it was the Buddha did some amazing psychic feats to try and teach a group of other ascetics, fire worshippers in India. And even though there were amazing psychic events which he showed these people, that didn't really count for very much. And then when the Buddha actually taught Dhamma, that's when they decided to follow the Buddha. That's what made them enlightened. Because some of the psychic stuff of flying through the air, reading people's minds, or doing other sort of weird stuff, it may appear, you know, to be exciting, but it doesn't really teach people the Dhamma. It's more like sort of spiritual entertainment, which is one of the reasons why the Buddha never encouraged that. I think it was probably because that event, this is my interpretation, because that event of seeing just doing strange, weird, supernormal things never really impressed these fire disciples, these fire worshippers. But actually, when he taught the Dhamma, that went far deeper. And that's what sort of made them his disciples. So sometimes, now if you did any psychic power, it would be, so what? But if you could actually do something which is teaching a person the Dhamma, that is far more effective in helping them and serving them.
I think if I'm not wrong, one of the pictures that I've seen is that he's like leading a lot of monks, like flying. Apparently he's like going to see his mother.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the events that happened in October, Light Festival.
Yes, but even that is a bit sus. Because that's not in any of the suttas. That was actually recorded in after the time of the Buddha. That's part of the Abhidhamma stories, but that's not part of the suttas, that particular event. But it's a case that just after a person passes away, that's where the people like to actually to exaggerate, you know, some of the events in the life of their teacher. And even Ajahn Chah, there was one event which occurred, which I know was a pure exaggeration. And that was when, in the early years of Wat Pa Pong, his monastery, a reasonably well-off man from Ubon, which was the nearest city, went to listen to the Dhamma teaching on a Poya night, on a moon night, during the rains retreat. And because it was a monsoon season, his car got bogged. in the road, maybe a kilometre from the monastery, from the hall. You know, still within the monastery precinct, but maybe half a kilometre from where the hall was. And he got bogged, it was pouring down with rain, he couldn't get the car to move, and he saw through the windscreen of his car Ajahn Chah himself come and push the car out of the mud, you know, so that he could get to the hall. And he thought, what a humble monk this is, not caring about, you know, keeping his robes dry or the mud. You know, even though the, you know, very senior monks, so they shouldn't be pushing lay people's cars. But he saw Ajahn Chah, and his faith in the great master really improved. How humble he was. And then his faith went through the roof when he saw that Ajahn Chah sitting in the hall giving a Dhamma talk. Dry, with no mud on him at all. And he thought, wow! Psychic power, I saw with my own eyes, Ajahn pushed the car through the mud. 5 minutes later, I see him perfectly dry. He's been in the hall all the time. He must have been meditating and saw my predicament and used his astral body or mind-made body to help me and push a real psychic power at last. And I went all around the town. The truth of the matter was, it was Ajahn Chah's cousin, who was a novice, who, at night time, in the rain, you know, looking through the window of a car, and he thought it was Ajahn Chah. And it wasn't. It was actually the monk who's been here, Ajahn Pai Tu, years ago. It was him. And he just kept saying, it was me. Oh, yeah, you would say that, you know, just to protect your teacher. He said, no, it was me. I did that. I was a novice. You know, you can see some similarities, especially in the darkness with the rain-soaked jungle. But, of course, people wanted to believe a psychic power. So they believed it. And this is what happens afterwards. I don't know about me when I die. People say, oh, psychic powers. If they're not real, you make some up, I'm sure. He knew what I was what I was thinking. So that's one of the reasons why that those things exist. But real monks, real nuns, we don't sort of emphasize them. Okay, here we go. Once again. Oh, yeah. Yeah, using microphone is most important. Okay. That's that.
What is most important in this life? Oh, it's a profound question. Oh, I don't know. I think to me, it's what means a lot to me. What's most important to me in this life is that I have the opportunities to practice and also, you know, be able to do really of service and give. And actually it's really give me a lot of joy and happiness when I give. And actually it's more meaningful than try to accumulate lots of things. And I think In the world outside, people think that what is called successful is that how much you be able to accumulate, and they call it successful. To me, is that it's more inspiring that that if you be able to, for example, as a parent, you know, that you teach your children how to love, how to care, how to practice generosity, and to be a good person. Actually, this is the best inheritance that you can give to your children. Then you leave behind lots of money, you know, in the bank. I don't think those, you know, lots of money, how many houses you have, that is not the best inheritance. I think the best inheritance that is we can give to our next generation is to really teach them the Dhamma and to live a good life and to be a good person. I think this is really, and also to be a peaceful and calm person. And, you know, you can't buy peace, you know, no matter how wealthy you are, isn't it? It's priceless. So I find that this is something that in my life, Israeli life, that I find it, that is important to me, that I be able to give, especially something I can share, like peace. And actually, it's really inspiring, and especially when people come to our monastery, and they can feel the peace, the energy there, because of, actually it's important that if the community is live in harmony, and you have the energy, and I think this is the most, to me, is the most important thing that I'd be able to give. And actually, we tend to take it for granted, you know, and not, you know, some people want to give, they have nothing to give, and especially some things that is so precious, like peace, you know, be of service. I think this is really important to me.
Very good.
Okay. May I ask a question? I'm sorry, I've got a microphone here.
Yeah.
I kind of have a two-part question. How does the teachings go with non-attachment in relationships? And I'm finding, dealing with emotions and that sort of thing. I know I came to one of your talks and I'm finding I'm just a little bit overwhelmed with emotion at the moment, so I'm finding I don't have that same peace. So.
Is that for you? Which one?
Thank you.
Oh. You mean that the relationships? That is.
Yes, relationships, yes.
Yes, and it's difficult not to have a. Attachment?
Yes.
Actually, when it is a true love, actually, there's no attachment. I remember I just shared with you this is happening some years ago. And I was a bit upset with one of my siblings. I was thinking that she's not doing something that is really right. And, you know, I keep thinking, how can you do that? It's that terrible. You shouldn't have done that. Go on and on and on. Almost half the night, you know, I can't really sleep. My mind go on and on. Because I think that I really love her. I think that I really care. Because I upset because I love this person. Then suddenly I stop. And I ask myself, actually you don't love her. Because I realize that I attach to my own views much more than anything else. Just because of my views of this is wrong. This is not right. So actually I attach to my own, you know, my own views, you know, this is my sense of self, you know, than anything else. So if you truly love that person, you know, you love them as the person is. That's, you know, that is that is the no attachment, because that attachment is actually more attached to my own views, myself. You know, then I try to justify that because I love her, I care for her, that's why I'm upset, I'm angry, you know. But actually I realize that actually I attach to my own views much more than I truly love that person. If you truly love that person, you love the person as the person is.
I'm finding it just difficult to be vulnerable, I suppose, and to allow myself the feelings. I guess that's my biggest thing.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot of practice, you know. Of course, you know, this is how you feel, and we didn't try to deny that. That's why sometimes it's just, because sometimes we tend to, whenever feelings arises, we tend to identify that feelings as good or bad. But sometimes just be with that feelings, just be with it and make peace with that, and it will just subside. But
thank
actually,
you.
It's most of that is our, we manifest that, we add on, you know. We start to think about our feelings and we start to identify that, and we create a whole lot of story. So just be with that feelings, how we feel. You know, I feel I'm not happy, I just feel that, yes, this is how I feel. I feel tense, you know, and just deal with that, and those feelings come and go. And
thank
try
you.
To make peace with that.
That makes so much sense. Thank you. So I'll just be with it. Thank you.
Very good. Very good. You're doing well. You're on a roll. From Hong Kong. Do kids come into our life to teach us lessons? How would I know? I haven't got any kids. I feel that they are my greatest teachers. Unfortunately, I fall into the hole of fear, anger, and judgment too often. Can you help? Well, I think the last answer was excellent. Is, yeah, you have fear, anger, and judgment often with your kids. But... and you see that kids are just being kids, and sometimes the idea of being vulnerable and just letting the kids just be kids. Yeah, they'll upset you, but that's your karma because you upset your parents. Sometimes you get angry, but that's expecting from your kids something they will never give you. And judgment too often... kids are kids. So sometimes that as a a mother or a father, sometimes you should try and maybe imagine that we are their grandparents. Because I was mentioning about grandparents on Friday night. Grandparents don't seem to be so afraid or get so angry and judge their grandchildren so much. But they love them to bits. And the children learn so much from their grandparents. So yeah, kids do come to teach us lessons. And one of the lessons is you don't own your children. You even say here, we call them my kids. They're not your kids. They come into your life. Where did they come from? You don't know from their past lives. Our job is to look after them for a certain amount of years. And then we should let them go. should regard them as they come into our care. We nurture them, look after them for a time. And eventually we have to let them go. But as soon as you say they are ours and possess them, and again feel that we own them and that our reputation depends upon them, this is sometimes where we, our ownership, the fear of losing something, the anger when we can't control them, and judgment. I think it all comes from regarding our children as ours, as my kids, instead of you're just looking after them. For 19, 20 or so years. That's all. Anything you want to add to that?
Yes, when we talk about true love, actually it's a true loving kindness. Actually, there is no barrier between ourselves and others. We include them. So I remember when I reflect and contemplate that, the moment I identified this is my son, actually, I no longer that is the love is not there, because it's being exclusive. There is a barrier already between myself and my son. And if I said that, oh, this is my son, so that is already a barrier. So there's true loving kindness. Actually, there's no barrier. It's not me. And mine. The moment we identify that this is my son, you know, and actually that is already a barrier, and that is not, this is sometimes we tend to identify, can we attach to the idea of this is me, and we try to own that, and we think that this is love. Actually, this is not true love. If we truly love, actually, there's no barrier. We just, you just include them, there's no barrier, melting the barrier between ourselves and others. And actually, it's not that we try to give love and radiate love to others. Actually, we just opening the door of our heart, we just be inclusive to allow people come to us. It's not that we have something to give, but we just allow people to come to us, be inclusive. So,
very good. So now we have a question from Canberra, from Mr. Bill something or other. Ajahn mentioned when we're under stress, we could put down our stress and leave it a while, like when we put down a glass of water. When is the best time we can lift it up without stress? After you have rested. So, that's the time to actually to let go of, you know, when you're tired, then put it down. And then when you feel that you're able to pick it up again without stress, then pick it up. But learn how to rest, first of all. When you're fully rested, then you can pick up the glass of water. That's pretty easy. So, some more questions. Oh, Janice, do you want to add something to that? Do you want to add anything to it? Yeah. Yeah, very good. So, any other questions? Or should we take a break before we do the precept ceremony? Yes, so we can put down the glass and take a rest. Very good idea. Excellent. So, let's give a sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And thanks for Venerable Peka and Venerable Kassapa and the two Ajahns for helping out. So now a toilet break, and at 4:30, another 20 minutes, 15 minutes, we have the precept ceremony where people will be joining from overseas and from here to take the three refuges and the five precepts for the first time. Thank you for rescuing my throat. Hello? Might be gone. Hi. August. I. I will be in Serpentine.
Yes, right. Okay. She'll be here. Very good. Excellent. No, not really. Sorry? Yeah, sure. Very good. Hello, Sukihatsu. Now I've got so much cough medicines. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Okay. Sorry. Oops. Hello? Sorry. Of course. Soon is a matter of expectations. I am getting better soon. When was that? Yeah, well, that's soon. In the scheme of things, when the Buddha's dispensation lasts many eons, this is soon. It's only a couple of days. Yeah, I know, but because it's a busy weekend. But when I go back, it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, no problem. Lemon gives me sore tummy, and honey, I don't digest it. So I have my other ways of dealing with the problem. Sorry? Yeah, cup of tea. It's hot, and especially if it's sweet. I remember seeing a doctor about that years ago, and he said it's the same thing. Just needs to get some heat on your throat. But the main thing is not to talk so much. Yeah, that doesn't do well for me. So I tried everything, but just sometimes you just have to do what works for you. Exactly. It's coming. Very good. Thank you for your concern. Gammon. Yeah. Oops, turn off.
Rather than just accept the way he is. Yeah, the fear, yeah. Because of lack of confidence. Lack of confidence, the fear. So when this emotion comes up, you just be with that emotion, not to add on. The problem is we add on. We keep thinking about it, and then we add on, we do like a snowball, we just keep rolling, and then it becomes so big. Yeah, sometimes you just stay with that breathing, you know. Or you can do that breathing exercise. Just breathing in and breathing out peace. You know, do that. Because that gives you an imprint in your mind that you make peace, telling yourself, I have peace. It's
want to you want to stress or
yeah,
I'm okay, but I jump from you don't want to stress on me.
I let it alone. No, I'm fine. It's just my throat's not well. Sure. Maybe just drive by the Buddha statue. I mean, stand up. It's a bit windy. Yeah. Okay. I have some tea coming, so for the nuts. Yeah, but I've got some coming as well.
Ajahn, this is good for your throat.
It's good for some people's throat, but it might not be good for my throat.
Okay.
Oh, 77. That's a very good number. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Excellent. society well.
Okay, can I ask people to start coming in, because people are tuning in from overseas at 4:30, and that's only about a minute's time. And especially for those people who are taking the three refuges and the five precepts for the first time here in Western Australia, in Perth, who are present, please may you come in now. So those coming to take the three refuges and the five precepts, first of all, the first time, please come in. Where did Lucky go? Very good. So, taking the three refuges and the five precepts, first of all, first time, please come in. We're still missing quite a few people. So it is traditional that taking three refuges, Bhutang Savanang Gacchami, Dhammang Savanang Gacchami, and Sanghang Savanang Gacchami, is a traditional way of affirming that one's spiritual path is the path of the Buddha. And you may go to many different Buddhist countries and countries which aren't Buddhist, and they will still remember and recognize that Bhutang Savanang Gacchami, Dhammang Savanang Gacchami, Sanghang Savanang Gacchami is an expression worldwide. And I remember even reading in one book that, say, an Egyptian leader of Philadelphus Ptolemy in the first or second century BC, that he established a port city in the south of Egypt to take the trade from India. And there, even today, there are the graves of Indian Buddhists from such a long time ago. And we know that they are Indian Buddhists because the inscriptions on their gravestones were Bhutang Savanang Gacchami, Dhammang Savanang Gacchami, and Sanghang Savanang Gacchami. So it is almost like a worldwide ancient affirmation that one is taking the path of the Buddha in the three refuges. And those refuges always come along with precepts, very simple precepts, Parinipata Veeramani, to train oneself not to deliberately take the life of another living being, and to not to take what's not given, not to steal, and not to lie, so not to commit a sexual misconduct, adultery, or to have sexual relations with somebody through lacks the ability to give consent, and not lying and not taking alcohol or non-medicinal drugs. The five precepts. So, are we online now? Okay, so those are taking the precepts for the first time. Could you please put your hands up? Excellent. Can you come a bit closer? Come in, if you possibly can. And you can bring your chair with you if you need a chair. It's okay to bring the chair. Because taking the precepts is not about torturing yourself. We want you to survive this ordeal. It's not an ordeal.
If you catch it on the floor, fine, but if you need an extra chair or something, you're most welcome. And this is being joined in. It's a total of apparently 77 people. So we have here 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. So the majority are overseas. So for those of you overseas who are joining in this precept ceremony, welcome to you. And it is our privilege to give you these three refuges and five precepts for the first time. And when you take these three refuges and the five precepts, it does really affect you quite deeply. You're going on an ancient spiritual path, which has been 2,500 years at least. And it's a path throughout the world of peace and kindness and gentleness. So you all have, hopefully, the refuges and precepts. Very good. For the ease, people, we do these in English. You all got a piece of paper? If you don't know the words, you can always hum the tune. Or lip sync. Have you got the English translation? Yeah. Are you ready? Okay. So I'll assume that you have already requested these three refuges and the five precepts. So please say when we go to homage to the blessed, noble and perfect Queen Mitre One. That's on page 21 there. Page 21. This is the Namo Tassa, where we do it in English. Page 21 on the bottom. 21. Are you all ready? Ready, steady. So you usually put your hands up like this because it's an important, respectful occasion. And you can chant with me. Homage to the blessed, noble and perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the blessed, noble and perfectly enlightened one. Homage to the blessed, noble and perfectly enlightened one. And that's the English translation of the Namo Tassa, Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. And then we go to the three refuges, which are just underneath the homage. And that's also on page 21. So, this time I will say it first, and then you repeat it afterwards. To the Buddha I go for refuge. To the Dhamma I go for refuge. To the Sangha I go for refuge. For the second time, to the Buddha I go for refuge. For the second time, to the Dhamma I go for refuge. For the second time, to the Sangha I go for refuge. For the third time, to the Buddha I go for refuge. For the third time, to the Dhamma I go for refuge. For the third time, to the Sangha I go for refuge. That is the English translation of the Buddhang Saranang Gacchami. And this completes the going to the three refuges. You say yes, Venerable Sir. And now we do the five precepts. So if you go forward two pages to page 23,
The first precept is not killing living creatures. I undertake the precept to refrain from destroying living creatures. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking what is not given. I undertake the precept to refrain from sexual misconduct. I undertake the precept to refrain from lying. I undertake the precept to refrain from intoxicating liquors and drugs which lead to carelessness. And very good. And just to explain some of those, the sexual misconduct, it doesn't mean no sex at all. It doesn't mean you can't have same-sex marriages and stuff. It means that the sexual misconduct, if you have got a partner, you stick to that partner. And you don't have sex or relations with someone who, you know, by our laws, they cannot give consent because it's a teacher to a student or an adult to a young person or someone to someone who's just not emotionally competent to give consent. That is banned, but just ordinary relationships are fine. And it's also to refrain from intoxicating liquors and drugs which lead to carelessness. It means just the usual alcohols and beers, not ginger beer, ginger beers, okay. And it doesn't mean drugs which are prescribed by a doctor. It means the non-medicinal, what we usually call these days, recreational drugs. So, but if those drugs, such as, and even sometimes marijuana is used medicinally in some jurisdictions, you know, to lessen pain, and is prescribed or advised by a doctor, then that is fine. So are there any questions on those five precepts? Okay. So now I give the final little blessing. These are the five training precepts. Through virtue, they lead to a happy rebirth. Through virtue, they lead to prosperity in this life. And through virtue, they lead to liberation. Therefore, one should purify virtue and keep these precepts. As well as well. That's sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Excellent. So now that you have taken those three refuges and the five precepts, and so you can now legitimately call yourselves Buddhists if you wish to, and it means that these are training precepts which you should be quite proud of, and they will be a vehicle to actually protect you in this life to be a really good person and a kind person. They just stop a person doing things which later on in their life they feel just so bad about, you know, things like, you know, killing a mouse or a fish or something. If you like to go fishing, there's no problem with going fishing. Just make sure you don't put a hook on the end of your line. And then you can drop the line in the water and it's even more peaceful. You don't get so disturbed. And from stealing, once your reputation comes as a person who's so honest that sometimes you can leave the bag here, leave the doors open and people don't steal anything. A wonderful world that would be. If, you know, our valuables, you know, were safe because people would look after them. And then, obviously, sexual misconduct may feel really good at the time, but afterwards, you kind of regret it afterwards. And lying, and again, we say it's very wonderful to have that honesty so people actually trust you. So what you say, you know, is what you mean. Of course, we make mistakes sometimes. But at least we're trying our best. We have an honesty about it, a sincerity, which is rare in this world, but it's a wonderful. And lastly, I refrain from taking intoxicating alcohol and drugs which lead to carelessness. It doesn't mean you don't have to, you can't go to parties and receptions. I used to go to parties as a student when I gave up drinking alcohol And it was even better. I could trust myself and other people would trust me. Which is to say, I thought I wouldn't get invited to many parties once I gave up drinking alcohol. But I found I got invited to more parties. Because I was the one who had to drive everyone home afterwards. The sober guy. And it was really good fun. So anyway, Sadhu for taking his precepts. And now we have these gifts to give out and certificates. And it's a very magic number today, 77. People are taking the three refuges and the five precepts today. And so again, it's a very auspicious number. But anyway, the first one is from someone from the ACT, that's James Chisholm. And because they're from overseas, that will probably mean they're not here. But this will be sent to you. And for Jamie Turner, yay, you are here from WA. So Jamie, congratulations on becoming a Buddhist officially. And this is one gift for you, the Kalama Sutta. And this is another gift for you. And this is another gift for you, a little Buddha to put on your shrine. And together, which would you prefer, yellow or white? Okay, I'll give you white for purity. Here we go. If you please look after me. Very good. Very good. And the next one, Vishnu Fung from Kerala State in India. I don't think they're here. Hilary Rice from Florida, United States. So if you're listening, sadhu, this will be sent to you later on. The same as Vishnu will be sent to you later on. And Abhinandan Bhattacharya from West Bengal in India. Congratulations, this will be sent to you later on. Heather Burton from California. Be sent to you later on. Ratnaraju from Wyoming in USA. Sent to you later on, unless you're here. Anna Bushman from Indiana, USA, sent to you later on. Asita Pereira from USA, sent to you later on. Steve Gudera, yay, here. Here we go. Here you go, Steve. Congratulations on taking the three refuges and the five precepts. May it give you lots of joy, happiness. And what's your favourite colour, yellow or white? Yellow. Here's a yellow one for you. And a little Buddha. Very good. Excellent. And the next one. Julian Gibbons. Julian, yay. Congratulations. And here's the Kalama Sutta and your certificate. And white or yellow? Yellow, okay. And a little Buddha statue for you. Very good. Sonia Neske from Victoria. Not here. Oh, Sonia, coming soon. Evan Brooks. From USA. Oh, yeah. Chandra, we were a singer. I remember Chandra, she's in UK. Joanna Nowakowska from Poland. So congratulations will be sent to you. Donald Trump from In My Dreams. Angus Holloway from Queensland. Are they here? No. But anyway, I'll be sent to you later on. Yeah, I know, because he keeps on applying every time, but he gets refused because of his bad behaviour. And Nadine Klein, yeah. Here we go. Congratulations. Lama Sutta, and also
Yellow or white? Yellow. Yellow. Well, yellow is very popular. And a little Buddha for your shrine. And Claudia Valadares Arakaki from Queensland. Okay, send to you later on. Albert So from Singapore. We sent to you later on. Nicholas Legaspi from Texas. It's a good Texas name. I thought Texas names would be John Wayne or sort of, well, Arnie Schwarzenegger or something. Anyway, but Nicholas Legaspi, he'll be sent to you in the post. Sybil Coslow from Germany. Be sent to you in the post. Congratulations. Alicia Marco from California, in USA, sent you in the post. Meredith James from Oregon, USA. Kenneth Adams from Kentucky. Hi, y'all, USA. Chrissy Tucker from Argyle in UK. Very good. We sent you in the post. Congratulations. Julie Wren from WA. Julie Wren? Okay. We sent you in the post. Peter Johnson from Maryland, USA. Judith Ann Millman from West Australia. Judith Ann Millman. Oh, okay. Sent you in the post. Ricky Young from USA, Texas. Got a big following in Texas. Andrew Garlick from Texas, too. Very good. Excellent. Andrew Peterson from Oregon in USA. We sent you in the post. Congratulations. Tonya Henry from Oregon, USA. Sent you in the post. Manjula Pemaratne from West Australia. Manjula. Not here. Okay. Christina Patterson from Oregon, USA. Congratulations. Tim Henry from Oregon, USA. Congratulations. Andrew Schramm from California, USA. Congratulations. Mr. Zuckerberg from California, USA. No. This is... I'll get a bit of fun. Giordano Bruno from California, USA. Congratulations. Vanessa DeSink from West Australia. Vanessa. Yeah, we got one. Here we go. Congratulations. And Kalama Sutta for you. And which one would you like? Yellow. Oh, okay, yellow. Oh, that's a flat one. That's not a nice one. It's squashed. Have a nice one. Very good. Here we go. Congratulations. Chi Chan Tan. Chi Chan. Yay. There you go. Here's your certificate. Welcome. And here's the Kalama Sutta. And here's... And... White. Ah, white for purity. Yes. Oh, it's a big one. And a little Buddha statue for you. Matisha Gunatileke from Surrey, UK, sent to you. David Miles from Hampshire, UK, we sent to you. Sarada Wirasinghe from California, we sent to you. Avanti Wirasinghe, also from California, we sent to you. Congratulations. Rudolf Arthur Zopfi from Spain will be sent to you. John Tan from West Australia. John? John Tan, West Australia? Nope, okay. Be sent to you. Louise Barchard from Sidmouth, UK will be sent to you. Nick Julian from East Tennessee will be sent to you. Tian Lim from Surrey, UK will be sent to you. Michael Wallace. Ah, very good. You haven't got where you live, you must be homeless. May you find a home soon. On Earth. Okay, I should put on Earth next time. Very good, congratulations. Here we go. And which colour would you like? Okay. Okay, do you want one of these? What is that, you think? Excellent. Very good. Mary Aurelia from Nevada, USA. Hilsa Ayonayon from California. Lindsay Huckett from Washington State, USA. Congratulations. Boris Judic from Croatia. Congratulations to be sent to you. Wiwi Jaya from North Sumatra, Indonesia. Be sent to you. Peter Cosgrove from West Australia. Sorry? Peter Cosgrove, yeah, he was the governor before. You did the same one? General Peter Cosgrove? Anyway, if it's WA. So, congratulations. L. Langley, West Australia. Here we go, L. Very good. And, oh, what's this one for? Overseas 048. For you. And what colour would you like? A white one. Very good. Excellent. Nan Jackson from Texas, USA. So one of the Jackson brothers, or his sisters or whatever. The Jacksons. No, not Michael Jackson's partner. Okay, no, maybe not. And Gunnar Rauschus from Sweden, be sent to you. Julie Hawkins from Georgia, be sent to you. Warren Buffett. No, Warren Bethel. I'm sorry, you're not Warren Bethel, sorry. My eyes. Congratulations, Warren. One of these, one of these. And, excellent. And one of the. Congratulations, welcome. Mo Fong Nam from Toronto, Canada. Watsala Wirasinghe from Colombo, Sri Lanka. Brent Dalglish. Hey, very good. Nice hairstyle. You know, you didn't have to shave your hair to get the five precepts, but it's nice anyway. Congratulations. And what colour would you like? And a nice Buddha statue. Very good. Dean Parrish. Again, another homeless one. Do you know where he lives? Where's the other homeless one? Dean Parrish. From somewhere on earth. Lillian Elvog. Lillian, yes. Congratulations and welcome to Buddhist Society West Australia. And choose your colour. And a Karma Sutta for you. Welcome. Thank you for coming. Anisha Wirasinghe from Colombo will be sent to you. Bei Ian Ju from West Australia. Yay. Yeah, go back. Very good. Congratulations. Karma Sutta for you. And which colour? Yes, white one, yeah. Yes, yeah, there's a few underneath as well. And oops, and take a nice Buddha statue as well.
Thank you.
Very good, welcome. Marius. Marius Lobu. Marius. Oh, okay, it'll be sent to you. Candace Huth from West Australia. Candace? Yay. How do you pronounce the last one? Huth. Okay, good. Welcome, Candace. And here we go, Karma Sutta, and the book, and the white one there. Yeah, here we go. Very good. Grace Hammond from USA, be sent to you. Caroline Sublan, no, not here, be sent to you. Charu Waypuri, Charu, no. And Joe McGawley from West Australia. Joe, The last but not the least. Very good. The Kama Sutra and book. It's Buddhist propaganda, isn't it? And there's only yellow ones left. Yeah, okay. Very good. So for those of you who are listening in, hopefully I pronounce your name properly. And if Mr. Trump was listening in, next time, let's make it real, okay? No fake. Oh, really? Uh-oh. Okay, see if you can find it. Nicholas, no, not this Nicholas. No, another Nicholas. No, he's always been a member for a long time. Yeah, you don't have either. What's your one? Okay. Kama Sutra. And one of these. Did you not hear your name? Okay. So we have to get your name down afterwards. And who else? Did anyone else miss out? Did you all get certificates? Okay. We will have you down later on. Actually, have another one, just because you missed out. And I have another flower. No, two, because we missed out. I feel guilty. Make up it. Double flower. Very good. Okay, so now we can give the blessings for everybody. And then we invite you all for a special cup of tea with the committee.
Sabarogawinimuto Sabasantapawajito Sabawera Madhigando Nibuto Chatuangbawa Sabitio Iwa Chantu Sabarogo Wina Satu Mate Sarayo Suki Diga Yugo Pawa Apiwa Danhasi Litsani Chak Wuta Pachalino Chataro Dhamma Watanti Yuano Sukhang Balang Sadhu, Sadhu, Sadhu.
Very good. So welcome everybody. You can move your feet now so you don't get sore. And we can all go into the room next door where there's tea and something to eat for you. Is that correct? Excellent. So welcome to the Buddhist Society of Western Australia. Congratulations. And all those overseas, congratulations to you as well. You may not have a Dhamma Centre close to you, but I hope you understand that Buddhist Society of Western Australia will always be close to you and at your service. And the books and certificates will be sent over in due course. If you don't get your books or certificate, please let us know and we'll see how we can get them to you. Excellent. So now we have a break for some tea and whatever else is available. So if you would lead them, Lucky, to the room next door, and some of our committee members and others will soon be welcoming you into our Buddhist Society. Very good.